This meeting of the Government Operations Committee is called to order. Today is May 1st, 2020. This meeting is being conducted interactively pursuant to House Rule 10.01. The first item on the agenda is the roll call. Ms. Stomach, could you please take the roll of members?
Representative Freiberg.
Here.
Representative Salk.
Here.
Representative Quam.
Present.
Representative Bonner. Representative Elkins.
Here.
Representative Gomez.
Present.
Representative Heinrich.
Present.
Representative Kegel.
Here.
Representative Lehman. Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Lilly.
Here.
Representative Mason.
Present.
Representative Nash. Representative Nelson.
Here.
Representative Tice. Representative Vogel.
Here.
Representative West.
Here.
Representative Bonner.
Present.
Representative Lehman. Representative Nash. Representative Tice. You have a quorum, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Somick. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the April 30th, 2020 hearing of the Government Operations Committee. Members should have been emailed a revised copy of the minutes not too long ago. I will move approval of the minutes of April 30th. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed? Motion carries. The first bill on our agenda is House File 4018. Representative Andrew Carlson is here to present the bill. I will move that House File 4018 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Welcome to the committee, Representative Carlson A. Would you like to present your bill? He was here.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, now I can.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Representative Andrew Carlson. I have just a brief intro on House File 4018, and then I believe there are some testifiers as well. House File 4018 amends Minnesota Statutes Section 273.1385, which authorizes the payment of the annual state aid to local governments to cover costs of increased employer contributions to PERA General. The bill amends Subdivision 4 by replacing the current June 30th, 2020 termination date with a new provision that states that the aid continues until the plan becomes fully funded or June 30th, 2048, which is the end of the current 30-year amortization period. So that's essentially what this bill does. I know there are some testifiers to speak to some of the history behind this proposal, as well as be able to answer any questions as well.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. I do have four people who've signed up to testify. And we do have a couple other bills, so I'm going to ask testifiers to keep their remarks to 2 or 3 minutes, or less would be better. Ms. Lencheski, Ms. Susan Lencheski is first on the list. If you could please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Chair Freiberg, actually, I'm attending just to answer questions if any comes up based on the approval of the LCPR of this bill.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Lencheski. We will call on you if there are any questions for you. Next on the list, I have Commissioner Jan Callison of Hennepin County. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Callison. If you could please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Jan Callison. I'm a member of the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners, formerly a Mayor of Minnetonka, and I'm here testifying in support of House File 4018 and offering a local government perspective. Every governmental unit in the state is required by state law to pay for its share of an employee's pension costs. The legislature, through the LCPR, establishes our contribution rates. We have little or no direct control. The legislature decides the benefit level, all the rules, and the contribution required. In 1997, the legislature passed a significant pension reform bill that increased contribution rates for employers and employees in the para-general fund. To help local governments offset these increased employer costs, a local government aid program was established and was set to expire on June 30, 2020, when the plan was expected to reach full funding. While PARA has not yet reached full funding, the aid program will end. As the largest local public employer in the state and as the largest single contributor to the PARA general plan, Hennepin County is acutely aware of the funding of PARA. Should PARA sneeze, we like to say, Hennepin County catches cold. The PARA state aid program meaningfully helps Hennepin County meet our state mandated costs. Without this state aid, the cost will be shifted onto local governments and property taxpayers. As a former mayor of a suburban community, Minnetonka, that did not and does not get LGA, I will add that the PARA state aid program acknowledges and helps every community in the state. We fully support the restoration of the aid program and thank you for your attention to this important issue. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Commissioner Callison. Next on the list, I have Gary Carlson. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Carlson. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'm also testifying today on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Minnesota Intercounty Association, the Metro Cities Organization, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, the Municipal Legislative Commission, who all joined me in supporting House File 4018. We'd like to thank Representative Carlson for introducing the bill and also Representative Murphy, who has introduced a similar bill earlier in the biennium, and also thank our co-authors of the of both those bills, Senator Julie Rosen, who is carrying the bills in the Senate. Commissioner Callison outlined the program very well. I won't get into too many details because we've also submitted a letter for your consideration that does answer some of the other questions, but I would like to comment on a couple of other items. Number one, the payments go out to 1,400 local units of government across the state, including cities, counties, and townships, and other special taxing districts. So this program, although small in size, does benefit a great number of jurisdictions across the state of Minnesota. And the other important point to make right now is that this program is sunsetting on June 30th of 2020. It's really a very difficult time for local units of government because we're experiencing unanticipated pandemic expenses. We are seeing revenue declines and delays in property taxes, and to lose this funding source will only exacerbate those challenges we face. So with that, I would just urge the committee to support this important program and its extension, and the state will help maintain the commitment to helping fund that 1997 contribution increase that was enacted by the legislature. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Next on the list, I have Ethan Vogel. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Ethan Vogel. I'm the legislative director for AFSCME Council 5. I'm also speaking on behalf of AFSCME Council 65 and Teamsters Local 320. Our unions represent public employees in every part of the state, and collectively, we have over 30,000 members in the PARA system. We wholeheartedly support Representative Carlson's House File 4018. Pensions are a collaborative and shared venture between employees and employers. House File 4018 recognizes the very important role the state plays in this relationship. The state sets the benefit and contribution levels. In 2018, after 3 years of working with employers and the state, we achieved a major pension reform. And frankly, this measure should have been included in the 2018 legislation when the full funding date of PARA was extended. We can't tell right now where the COVID-19 crisis is going to lead, but we have no doubt that every level of government will be affected by this crisis, as will every public employee. We think it's absolutely imperative that the state remain a strong partner in seeing PARA fund through this crisis. We hope all members of this committee can support House File 4018 and find a way for it to be funded. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Vogel. Appreciate your testimony. That concludes the list of people I have who have signed up to testify. We can move to member discussion. Are there any member questions? I do not have anybody on the list at this point. Let's give it another 10. Representative Vogel has raised his hand. Need to be specific here. We have a testifier named Vogel and a representative named Vogel, and the same can be said for the last name Carlson. So hopefully I can keep it all straight. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully I can keep it straight as well. I do recall this as a member of the Pension Commission, and as I look at this, it appears to be that there was a revenue note on it and therefore depended on the tax committee to do this, not an appropriation. Is somebody there available I could answer with everything that's going on the likelihood of this being able to be funded?
This is Representative Vogel. Thank you for the question. This is being moved to the Ways and Means Committee, so they discuss the financial aspect of it there as well. However, let me see. I don't know. Chesky, is that something you might be able to respond to?
Chair Freiberg, I'm sorry. I don't have any updated information about how we're doing in terms of budgeting and that sort of thing. But Representative Vogel is correct that when this went from the Pension Commission to the special session in 2019, it was in the tax bill, and I believe it was taken up by the tax committee because I'm not exactly sure the reasons for that, but it wasn't treated as an appropriation at that point.
Representative Carlson, did you have a comment on it? I saw your Zoom window turn yellow for a second there. I wasn't sure if that was what that meant.
No, Mr. Chair. My history with this bill is fairly limited, although I will say that the information put together by the Legislative Commission on Pensions, Ms. Lanchesky's work on putting that together does provide some of the historical aspects to this bill from last year. In terms of what transpired in the full tax committee last year, I don't know. Representative Vogel's comments are well taken. This does come with a price tag, and that will need to be addressed before the end of session.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and knowing that it'll probably come to it will be coming to Ways and Means for discussion, I just wanted to bring it up because I know that this was an important thing to many of us on the Pension Commission, and I would call it in some of the trading that went on maybe in the special session that some other things were funded at the expense of this, and I do think this is important for a lot of small communities, and as we get into future discussions, we should be cognizant of that. Because there were maybe some larger city entities that benefited through the lack of doing this. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Is there any additional member discussion? Okay, seeing none, Representative Carlson, did you have any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is important to a lot of state and local employees, and as the testifiers stated, while these are difficult times. Finding a way to get this funded, I think, would make a lot easier for folks, knowing that their pensions are fully funded. So definitely appreciate you taking the time to hear this bill today.
Thank you. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 4018 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Salk.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Bonner. Representative Bonner.
You're mute.
You appear to be muted.
Sorry, I'm pushing the button and it's not working. Yes.
Representative Elkins.
Yes.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Heinrich.
Aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lehman. Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Nash. Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative Tice. Representative West. Representative West.
Aye.
14 ayes, Chair.
Okay. There being 14 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to Ways and Means. The next bill on the agenda is House File 1842. I will move that House File 1842 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Wagenius, would you like to present your bill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1842 appropriates the money in the Renewable Development Account. And this is the account that was established in the mid-1990s as part of the agreement between the state and Xcel, when Xcel was allowed to store nuclear waste casks on Prairie Island. There are 4 provisions in this bill that I'm going to point out to you. The first is in the Solar in Schools program. That is a program that Xcel will be developing so schools in its territory can install solar energy that would also be used as a teaching tool. In order to implement the solar on schools, Xcel will file a specific plan with the Commerce Department that includes how the funds will be appropriated in this bill will be used. On line 3.24 of the bill is the requirement that Xcel provides the procedures governing the application and financial benefit award process and the costs Xcel and Commerce are projected to incur. Rather than requiring rulemaking, the bill spells out the requirements of Xcel's plan, systems that will be eligible, and the application process. The Commerce Commissioner must approve the plan before the program goes forward. The second thing I will point out to you is that some of the Renewable Development Account money will be used for rebates to those who buy electric vehicles. On line 7.15, the Commissioner of Commerce is charged with developing the procedures governing the application and rebate reward process. The bill does not anticipate rulemaking because the bill specifies eligibility, the eligibilities, the applications process, and the rebates that will be awarded by the Commissioner on a first-come, first-served basis. The bill also specifies the amount of the rebates. There's a similar thing on line 8.3. The Commerce Commission must develop procedures for the grant program for auto dealers who sell electric vehicles and need to be certified. The bill does not anticipate rulemaking because the bill spells out the eligible applicants and the eligible expenditures. The third thing I would point out on lines 7.7 and 8.13, there are provisions that allow the Commerce Commissioner to receive reasonable costs to administer the electric vehicle rebate program and the certification program. Commerce will need to justify the cost, but that does not involve rulemaking. The fourth thing I would point out is that some of the RDA money will be used for electric school bus demonstration grants. On line 11.11, the Commissioner of Education is charged with developing administrative procedures governing the application and grant award process. Rather than requiring rulemaking, the content of the application and the eligible expenditures are spelled out in the bill. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Chair Wagenius. I do not have anybody who has signed up to testify on this bill, so I will move to member questions. Also, for members' benefit, Representative Lehman has joined us, so please let the record reflect that she is present for this meeting. Member discussion to House File 1842. Okay, I am not seeing any. We've been a quiet committee this week, but that's okay. So I will closing remarks, Chair Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I would appreciate your support of the bill. We will be like to go to Ways and Means.
Yep. Okay, with that, I will renew my motion that House File 1842 be referred to Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Saul.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Elkins.
Yes.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Heinrich.
Aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lehman.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Nash. Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Tice. Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative West.
No.
14 ayes, 1 nay, Chair.
Okay, there being 14 ayes and 1 nay, the motion prevails and the bill is Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you, Chair Wagenius. The next and last bill on the agenda is House File 3423. I will move that House File 3423 be referred to the Division on Environment and Natural Resources Finance. Representative Sandell, would you like to present your bill?
Thank you, Representative Freiberg, and members, thanks very much for the chance to talk to you about the need to study and set standards for the health of our water. I think we all agree that taking clear water for granted is no longer an acceptable policy. We haven't always been attentive as we ought to have been to this resource, and we all share some of that responsibility. 3423 is a step toward knowing more about the threats to our Minnesota water. The bill would give rulemaking authority to the MPCA to study and set standards for the presence of per- and polyfluoroalkylate substances, PFOs or PFAs, in our water. PFOs and PFAs are highly persistent, mobile, toxic chemicals. Their presence in drinking water in the East Metro area near the 3M facility and landfills is a major concern of my constituents. But the threat to public health doesn't stop there. PFOs and PFAs are used in food packaging and cooking equipment, as you probably know. They're used to stain-proof furniture, carpets, and clothing. They're present in firefighting foam and many other industrial uses worldwide. Exposure has been associated with a wide variety of illnesses. Studies have found that PFAs may affect child development and the ability of a woman to become pregnant. Recently, my wife attended one of the PCA information sessions describing the process being made in the 3M settlement. She sat next to a young woman, and in the context of the conversation, my wife asked her if she had children. No, the woman said. And now we don't know what to do. Do we move because of the water? And if that's what we choose to do, we're afraid that our house will have lost much of its value. I don't believe that making policy should be done in response to an anecdote, but that conversation seems to me suggest that there's not only serious scientific, economic, and political dimensions to this issue, but the emotional response to threatened water is deep and growing. In Minnesota, the MPCA sets water quality standards. Those standards are the fundamental regulatory and policy foundation of preserving and restoring the quality of all waters in our state. Their authority for that work is found in Chapter 115. House File 3423 appropriates $492,000 in fiscal year 21 from the Clean Water Fund to the MPCA to adopt rules establishing water quality standards for PFAs and PFOs. Now, I'm less familiar with the rulemaking process than some of you, but there are others here with me today who can speak directly to those issues. I do know that Minnesota Statute 14.125 does not apply here, so that 3423 is excluded from the time limit on the authority to adopt, amend, or repeal rules that effectively set an 18-month clock to establish the water quality standards. I've spoken with representatives of PCA, and I know this is not an easy or quick process. Researching and writing a technical support document is an arduous responsibility, and that's just the beginning. I've also spoken with others who are skeptical that the requirements of the bill may be too expensive or too difficult to deliver. I understand the respect and respect their concerns, but we need to get started. And if this bill is the dock from which we launched the boat, I think it's a good place to start. The science of detection has become more sophisticated and the understanding of these chemicals more detailed. That technology and knowledge will support the effort this bill requires. Members, I urge you to support the bill, and together we can enter a serious discussion about all we can do to protect the interests of our families and meet this challenge to public health. Thanks very much. I have others here with me who may wish to answer questions to you, but I certainly appreciate your attention and help this morning or this afternoon. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Sandell. I have one person who has signed up to testify, Aaron Clems.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg. I submitted my testimony written, and it says it's available on the website. I don't feel the need to reread that. I'm just here to answer any questions that folks might have about it. So thank you.
Thank you. That's appreciated, Mr. Clems. So there's no one else who has signed up to testify, so we'll move to member discussion. I saw Ranking Member Quam, you raised your hand, so you will go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if there's anyone present that could enlighten us on the current federal regulations on these substances.
I know Greta Gauthier is from MPCA is here and available to testify, and she's nodding, so I think she might be the appropriate person to respond to that question. So welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your response.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Greta Gauthier, and I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. So we are the agency that enforces and implements in Minnesota the Federal Clean Water Act. Thank you for your question, Representative Quam, about what is the status of federal regulation around PFAS. There were many, many bills that were floating around last year in the U.S. Congress. I will probably need to get back to you because I don't have the list of the federal provisions at my fingertips. So I will supply that in writing to the committee after the hearing. But they have not taken up water quality standards per se.
Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. Representative Quam, did you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for the record, there are no federal regulations. There's discussion on the federal level. I do have a question as to what processes are there in existence for treatment. So if a municipality was to try to treat or address this, what is presently available?
Ms. Gauthier, I saw you shaking your head to the initial statement about the lack of federal regulation. So if you'd like to answer, comment on that and then respond to Representative Quam's question, that would be great.
Of course, Mr. Chair, happy to. Representative Quam, I apologize if I was confusing, but What I was saying is there are not federal drinking water standards for the PFAS. So PFAS is a family of thousands of chemicals, of which the two involved in this piece of legislation are amongst those thousands. The federal government does not have drinking water standards for these, but the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the U.S. EPA, has released a plan to start going down the path towards getting drinking water standards on PFAS as a whole. And so I would be happy to share that plan. And then I am sorry, I forgot your second question.
Representative Quam, would you please repeat your second question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I'm understanding correctly, the federal government has a plan and is working on this, and Minnesota is planning to start writing rules before the federal plan and the federal activity is started. The second question was, if we have drinking water standards, generally there are responsibilities for local municipalities to meet those standards, and I want to know, what are the current suggested or approved processes for addressing the correction of a level or the treatment of water to meet this possible standard that the MPCA is looking at introducing?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Quam. Thank you for the question. There are no processes right now for cities, municipalities, or any wastewater treatment plant to do what you're saying with PFAS. The first step in getting to that point is there is more research need to be done while we are gathering that research, and we need to use it to set water quality standards. Once the standards are in place, they, of course, define or help guide the limit that would go to any explicit or any single wastewater treatment plant. So there are many steps to be gone through. There's lots of public comment and public input. It is not uncommon for the federal government and states to be working at the same time on the same things and sharing information as we go. So I think that right now, though, there is no set of standards that regulate PFAS.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. Representative Quam, did you have
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would the author be able to enlighten me? I believe this bill is relaxing the process and timeline to be able to implement standards. Is that a correct interpretation of part of the function of this bill?
Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and Representative Quam. I don't think it's relaxing the standards. I think that the fact is that the bill is exempt from Minnesota Statute 14-125. This, as you know, and as Ms. Gauthier said, that this is an extensive effort, and the issue of how much time this will take, we want to make sure that there is time for PCA to provide this research and to put together the reports. We're not trying to relax or go around standards. This issue does not apply to, or I should say MS 14-125 just does not apply to this bill.
Okay. Representative Quam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm hearing is that there needs to be more research. There's work on the federal and the state level to be done before you can get to a point of coming up with applying or making or addressing standards. The details on the standards and et cetera are another committee's purview. Purview of our committee is okay for us to move forward with the process of rulemaking. And it becomes apparent to me that MPCA says we've got to do some research. The federal agencies are looking at this, but they don't have. So if there's not the research done, why are we putting the cart in front of the horse by saying, okay, write the rules? And then, big exempt from the normal processes, et cetera. So I would think that this would be not ripe for addressing at this time.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Vogel, you raised your hand.
I did, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And I'll preface my remarks by the small city that I live in was basically forced by the MPCA standards to build a water treatment plan, which has now made the water almost unaffordable for a lot of people. And I'm not against this. In fact, I remember a lot of conversation on the issues that had emerged in the Eastern Metro because of this. But my concern is that as we move through this, that all of a sudden new standards will be developed, and it's possible that even cities like mine that have already overburdened really their residents with fees on water usage, it could be further hurt. So my question is, I'm not sure to who the rep or the representative or Ms. Gottner, how are you going to have assurances that the cities, the local units of government, are really going to have enough input, and that there's going to be enough, I guess I'd say, power vested in them to protect their residents from water that they can't afford? And that's not to say that this isn't a good idea, but again, we're putting on additional standards, and we're going into an economic period where these cities and municipalities are going to be really stressed. And if indeed something comes out of this study that mandates them to do more, how are you going to let them input so that their voice is equally heard relative to the problem, which I know exists?
Ms. Gauthier, did you want to take a crack at this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your questions, Representative Vogel. The answer to your question, in short, is the rulemaking process. And also our close working relationships with cities and with organizations that represent cities. So our rulemaking process, as I'm sure you're aware, has multiple points of input for the public, and the public includes cities. So I understand what you're saying, that cities, some of our smaller cities in Minnesota, are sometimes overburdened or feeling overburdened, but and we certainly don't want that to be exacerbated, but at the same time, citizens out there, especially in the East Metro, have made it very clear, but elsewhere around the state too, that they're very concerned about PFAS. These chemicals are the forever chemicals that were made to never break down and to not adhere to anything. So they've been used to make Teflon and Gore-Tex and other surfaces like that, and they're everywhere. So, you know, we are, I think nationally, you're seeing many states are looking at drinking water standards, water quality standards for PFAS, and the fact that we and the federal government are both working on it means that, you know, we have the basic research on these substances, how their impacts are on the environment and human health. What we're doing more research on, and that we're being funded with some funding in the House bill for the LCCMR, is we're looking at how these PFAS move and how we can start intervening to implement best management practices at the local level to avoid PFAS and to stop the cycle. So we rather look at cities as a very important partner in working together to help stop the spread and the cycle of PFAS. So I hope I've answered your question, but we are hearing loud and clear from citizens, legislators, and others that PFAS is important, and they want they want some regulations set up on it.
Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the response. And I know the process is intended to have all of the voices heard. I'm going to vote against this because I just don't feel we're ready for this. And my concern is that we've got a lot of cities out there that may not be ready for what could come from this study. And I'm not disputing the need to address the issue, but I think that there's got to be more specificity in here relative to the process, including those people, those municipalities and so forth that are going to be most affected. And what I see here is a grant to put together some rules that probably may be necessary, but may be expedited, and then really infringe on a tax base that is already going to be severely hurt by what's going on now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Representative Sandell, did you have a comment?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Vogel. I appreciate the question, and it's a question that I've spoken with a number of times with Representative Josh Heisman, who we've had conversations within our committee and informally as well. One of the important parts of this study, it seems to me, or any scientific research, is to make progress, hypothesize, evaluate that hypothesis, study, evaluate, and perhaps reassess. And I feel as strongly as you do that all the partners who might be affected by this should be part of that conversation. If we're headed in a direction which seems to be unproductive, we should change our course. If we're headed in a direction which seems to be overly expensive, we can take a step back and see how the costs fit with the benefits. But this is an issue, as Commissioner Gauthier said, which is not just a local issue. I happen to be representative of a district which is directly impacted by the 3M settlement. And the discoveries that we're making is that the PFAS and PFAS have migrated into areas that we haven't that we didn't recognize initially. Besides that, the cities of Duluth, the cities of Bemidji are also facing a real crisis in water. I'm not suggesting that no matter what this costs, we should go ahead. No matter what the cost, cities should be paying for that. My concern is that this is a genuine threat to public health, and we have to get started. I appreciate Representative Qualm's concerns as well, but it seems to me that Minnesota has been a real front runner when it's come to environmental protection, and there's nothing more well, there are a few things anyway more important than our water. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Sandell. Just want to let members know that Representative Nash is now in the meeting, and so please let the record reflect that he was present for the meeting. Representative Gomez, you had your hand raised next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just wanted to make a comment in response to a couple of the things that we've heard. You know, I guess I just think that this idea that we need to wait for the feds, that we need to wait any longer really on this issue is really wrongheaded. You know, the East Metro is a global hotspot for these chemicals. You know, there was an $850 million settlement paid by 3M because of their many years of contamination. You know, as we've heard in the testimony, Minnesota is because we are a global hotspot, because we're in a lot of ways the epicenter of this contamination, we know more in our state than they do probably anywhere else in the country about this. And so I guess I just want to say that I'm really thankful to Representative Sandell for bringing this forward, because this is exactly the kind of leadership that our state needs to be showing on this issue, with which we have extensive experience and expertise. I just think it's totally appropriate for us to proceed with the urgency required by such a threat to public health. So I'm grateful for the work on this issue.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, clarification on this issue, it is important. It is timely. If I was in the past, I've been on the Natural Resources Committee, I would probably have more understanding where maybe it is research-wise. That's why I asked, and the MPCA person indicated, testifier indicated, there needed to be research. I hear just through this discussion a study in this. My issue is that we have done rules before the research and the information were there, and the courts ended up throwing a wrench in the works for rules having to do with phosphorus phosphates, because the scientific research indicated that the amount of iron in the water affected the process of where effluent in a stream was changed or proportionality changed into what we were concerned about. And we were regulating the effluent level. And the courts looked at the research once it came out and said our rulemaking was flawed. My concern is that we ought to have the research. I'm fine with a study with moving research and speeding up the process to a point we can do the rulemaking. But my understanding is before the committee, because this bill contains rulemaking and adjusting the standard process for the rulemaking. And that's why I don't think it is ripe for that. It's very ripe for additional effort into getting to the place where we can be confident and make that. And I haven't heard that from the testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Quam. I don't...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wondered if I might just respond to that last comment.
Sure.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out that that the courts have looked at our phosphorus water quality standard and rulemaking around that multiple times. And in every single case, the courts have upheld the agency's work. So I just wanted to make that point. And that also this bill is not adjusting the rulemaking process. It is simply giving us a little bit more time to complete the rule, because there will be a lot of compilation of data at the beginning. And when I said there is not enough research, I meant there's some pieces of research that are still missing, one of which is a key one that we want to fulfill with the funding in the LCCMR bill that's in the environment committees, not in your committee. But I just wanted to point out that we have been supported by the courts multiple times, and that we're not asking to change the rulemaking on this bill. We're asking, what the bill is asking is that we be allowed to do the rulemaking and given funding for that purpose. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. Representative Quam, did you want to respond to that? I also have Representative Lehman on the list to speak.
Just quickly, in that I distinctly remember in committee hearings that the courts found issue with that rule. But again, that's outside of the domain of this committee. My ill at ease is that we're authorizing something that is not quite ready. And if they're saying, well, we need more time to write the rules, well, why don't we use some of that time to do studies and research, and then we'll authorize writing the rules, since they're obviously saying that it's going to take longer than they normally would.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Lehman. You will want...
Am I muted?
Okay. Not anymore.
Okay, thank you. I have more of a statement, Mr. Chair, than I do a question. I'm actually going to vote against this proposal today. As you might recall, I had a proposal. It didn't move forward, but I had a proposal during this time to actually put a hold on any rulemaking for the next year or so. We're in really a momentous period here, and we're being told that we have to learn to live with this current pandemic, or at least with the virus, for another 18 months. And so I think during this time we should avoid doing anything that makes the future more unstable, maybe even more challenging for communities and businesses. I think we ought to be doing everything we can to make life easier for our communities and businesses to surface out of this very tough time. So I really hesitate to pass legislation, work on legislation that involves rulemaking. I would prefer that we focus instead on making life a little bit easier and stable for the next year and a half. So I think I'm going to probably be voting no on this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lehman. Are there any additional questions from members? Okay, seeing none, Representative Sandell, any closing remarks?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the time the members have spent listening to this conversation and discussion. I do want to say that I've also introduced a bill of 4175 with the support of MCEA and MPC and the MPCA, which would pursue greater research supporting our understanding of PCAs and PFOs. I understand the no votes that might come at the end of this roll call, but I'll take those no votes not as a negative statement, but as a direction for us in our research and our work on this issue. We need to work with cities. We need to work with all the stakeholders. We need to make sure that the future that we're facing is not only putting its economy back on its feet, but also making sure that our understanding of public health is foremost in our mind. We can't afford to put aside an issue such as this, which threatens our water. I would appreciate a yes vote, but I understand those who may have questions and reservations, and I certainly appreciate the conversation today. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 3423 be referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Salk.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
No.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Elkins.
Yes.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Heinrich.
No.
Representative Kegel.
Yes.
Representative Lehman.
No.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Mason. Representative Mason. Okay. Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Tice. Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative West.
Yes.
Eleven ayes, five nays.
There being 11 ayes and 5 nays, the bill is referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division. Thank you, Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
So that concludes our business. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, May 5th at 9:45 a.m., conducted via Zoom. The agenda for that has just been sent out before this meeting started. We will also be meeting a second time next week, hopefully our regular committee time on Thursday, but we will see about that. So keep an eye out for a notice about that. Representative Quam, did you have a question?
Yes, I noticed on some of the Zoom meetings, we can do, messaging on the side, so that if we had some general questions so that could be addressed, that way we don't have to raise our hand and go through this other process. I didn't see that here today, and so you may have noticed I've spoken a little bit more frequently than recent meetings, and I if that's possible to have in the future, that might help things go smoother.
It's possible, and I know some committees have done that. Our decision on this committee has been not to. I mean, I one thing I don't know that everyone is aware of, but if you send a message to another member intending it to be private, a feature, some might call it a feature, some might call it a bug of the Zoom software, is that everything becomes public, part of the transcript. So, and it can be distracting, I know, for members as well. So, members still have the ability to text each other if you do need to get a message to somebody, but at least at this point, our preference is not to, but we can discuss it. I'll discuss it with the staff at this
point. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The point being, we all know how to contact people privately in parallel to the meeting. I saw the functionality being a way to allow for, like every now and then we'll write a note, pass it to a page to give to the chair or the committee person to, do some communication so that it can flow smoother. And that was the general intent, was that to help the meetings go quicker, especially when there are questions or concerns, and maybe they could be addressed by a statement by the chair as opposed to the back and forth. So that was the intent. If it's possible, great. If not, I understand the concerns that you have.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I mean, it's not quite analogous to a note being passed just because it is public. If you have any messages you want to send to me, my phone, I don't conduct these meetings on my phone, but I know we have each other's cell phone numbers, so you're more than welcome to text me if there's a message you want to come to me and not to everybody else. But we'll continue to discuss it. I do appreciate the question, and I agree with you. It's not something that committees have handled consistently necessarily, but that's been our preference here. So is there any additional questions for members? Okay, seeing none, this meeting